You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, it's Lurk. Thanks for checking out the Van Flip podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to give us a rating and review and share us with your friends. You can follow the show on Twitter at Van Flip Podcast. Go ahead and shoot us a tweet right now. For all things hardcore and metal music and everything in between, check out lambgoat.com. Subscribe to Lambgoat's YouTube page and you can watch all these episodes on video, get breaking news and obscure metal content. And make sure you stay up to date by following Lambgoat and our guests on social media. I put all the links together in the show notes. Support the podcast at patreon.com/thevanflip. Each Patreon gets entered into our monthly giveaway, which we will announce next episode. And shout out to the Patreon supporters Dylan, Lachlan, and Alec. Thanks for the love. On this episode of the podcast, we have Shane and Eli from the West Virginia metalcore band Curses, who are currently signed to Sharptone Records and who just released their sophomore album, Chapter 2 Bloom.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is Oh no. Oh no, no, no. Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey,
how's it going, man?
We're sitting here with
Curses.
Oh yeah, we're Curses.
Eli,
oh yeah. Eli and
I think we're Curses.
We're part of Curses.
Well, that's all good.
I'm Eli Fry.
I'm Shane Cyrus, drummer.
And Eli vocalist. And Shane. Vocalist yes. and drummer.
His members.
Curses. And you know, when I was looking up stuff about you guys, I found that there were some other Curses that were bands or artists or DJs or whatever. So does it get confusing when people are, you know, trying to search for you or trying to learn about you guys where there's not that much, you know, that they can find easily?
Yeah, sometimes, especially when we first started with the name, there was several confusions because there was no active artist named Curses. The only one we could find on Facebook, their last post was like 5 years ago. So we were like, okay, I think this is safe. And we solidified the trademark. That was one of the first things we did was made the name legally ours, and then along the way other Curses just have kind of showed up, and there has been some confusion, especially on Spotify, because you know, when you use TuneCore or some outlet for Spotify, it doesn't check to make sure
right
it's the right Curses or the right artist name. So
yeah, and it definitely
had some DJ Curses show up before. There is a, I think he's a European DJ, so our American trademark doesn't count.
Right.
So. Yeah, we've got Spotify pretty squared away, though. We're having a lot of trouble with Apple Music. Did we ever get that fixed?
Yeah, and there's two different us Curses on Apple Music. Our Party Monster cover we did is on its own Curses artist page still, and we're still trying to email their bots that they have and get that fixed. But Amazon is still kind of messed up right now, too. The new Amazon music platform.
Right, yeah. You know, it does
we've got a lot of Curses that I've never heard of on our page. We're getting the streams for, but it's not us.
Yeah. It's definitely hard and difficult once you upload something like, say, through TuneCore or CD Baby or whatever kind of distribution platform you're using to, like, fix any of those errors, you know, because, like, I've got some stuff on Spotify as well. A friend of mine also had some stuff uploaded to Spotify under his, you know, artist name or whatever, but it was also like a Spanish kind of like merengue salsa artist, so it took him like 2 years of going back and forth with whomever to finally separate the two. And I mean, it was the same name, but like there was a space in between
yeah,
the word or something like that
difference.
Yeah, so it was very, very difficult. So yeah,
I kind Spotify of especially has tricked me sometimes, where they have their release radar playlist, where it, if you follow that band or artist, they will show you the new material that just came out on this pre-made playlist. And I've had band names pop up where it's actually some DJ somewhere,
yeah.
And I've seen other bands have the same problem. Like it happened to me about a month ago with Barrier.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of the band Barrier, but I follow them. I have on Spotify, and it said new Barrier song on your release radar. Check it out. And then I went to look, and it was some like indie future pop artist. Yeah, and I was like, this is not Barry.
Because the metal barrier is not even a band anymore.
Yeah, that's what confused me. I was like, is Barrier back? Like,
I bet that was a letdown.
Yeah, it hit me pretty hard.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult, especially, you know, when bands come and go as easily as they do sometimes in this scene. It's hard to keep up with all the names or what names have been taken in general.
Yeah.
But speaking of new material, you guys basically released an album earlier this month through Sharptone, and it was it's like your second, I believe it's your second full length album that I could find, and it's titled Bloom. I know it's like some number chapter two Bloom, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like whenever we all started playing together, like years and years before Curses even formed, there was just a lot of member changes, and we were in different bands and stuff. And when Curses finally came together, and we were like, okay, well, let's like. Let's add like kind of a theme to it. That might be kind of cool. It's something a little bit different. And we were like, we wanted to call them chapters. So yeah, like, I mean, ever since we've been Curses, we had chapter one Introspect in 2017 that it released. It should have been, honestly, that should have been released in like late 2014 or 2015. But that was that's a whole other conversation. And then early August we released Bloom, and it's been doing really well. We're stoked on it, and we still got more content coming on the way. We just released a guitar playthrough. It's about to come out, and the Change Drum playthrough just aired like a couple weeks ago, and then all the other streaming videos and the music videos that we put out. Just trying to keep content rolling since we can't really play shows right now.
Yeah. It's tough out there right now. Is that something that's on like a YouTube page, or is that through your website or paywall or like Sharptone? Or
it's all on Sharptone's YouTube.
On their, all the videos on their YouTube.
Do you guys get any kind of kickback for that kind of stuff when it, like, say, like, you know, you, granted this is just being facetious, but say you get like a million hits on your drum playthrough or something like that. Do you get any kind of kickback from that through Sharptone, or is that just like for the love?
Well, just the way that we have our deal with Sharptone right now, it's just basically they helped us out a lot, so we're going to be helping them out until we meet that quota, I guess.
Yeah, pay that debt off.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, no, I get it. Everyone goes through the same rigmarole. So before we get too far, I kind of want to jump back a little bit, like we were just talking about how the band got together, just because. You know, there's not a lot of interviews out that, I mean, there could be. I just couldn't find any in the last couple, you know, days, weeks here. So just to kind of give everybody an idea of, like, how you guys came together. You all live in a house right now. Do you guys still reside in West Virginia?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. So you Princeton, West Virginia now.
Nice. So is it an upgrade or a downgrade from where you were prior?
A little bit of both.
I don't want to speak for all of us, but I feel like it's an upgrade. Everybody had a situation where we needed to move somewhere kind of at the same time. It all kind of synced up, and we were like, well, we found this house just in time.
Well,
great deal. We just kind of threw it together and made it happen.
Yeah, it's great.
I'd call it an upgrade.
Yeah, because we've all moved around like for the past like 6 or 7 years probably. We've all like... We've all lived in like 3 or 4 different places, like for each of us. And then now, like, we've talked about having a band house before, and like this, we finally found a landlord that will let a band live together. And like, you know, and we got 5 dogs in the house and a cat, and a bearded dragon. So like, it's hard to find a landlord that's cool with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, shout out to the landlord right now, because that's going on.
Yeah, but like back to what you were saying, like, I mean, it was an upgrade overall, because, I mean, we're really happy where we're at now.
And so how long have you been living there, and how long have you guys, not necessarily living there, but how long before you guys, you know, got together, were you doing other things? Like previous bands and whatnot, projects and stuff.
Let's see, Shane, you go ahead, because you started when you were 14. I mean, like, I didn't know you whenever y'all started.
I played music with Davey for probably the longest time, like, since I even started trying to drum, which was, around 2009, 2010? It's hard to think that far back now, but...
Yeah, it's a decade.
We played with, you know, we would put together some small local bands, and then I think we picked up Michael and Brandon. Everybody kind of came from different regions and different musical backgrounds, and we kind of had to sift out other people to find each other.
Yeah, bands playing with other bands, and then like
I don't know,
people that you fuck with, and it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna stay in touch with these people, and then just slowly started coming along, I guess. And then whenever I knew Brandon before I'd even heard of before I knew any of these guys, and Brandon joined a band that they were in. And I was like, oh, cool, my good buddy Brandon just joined a new band. I'm going to check him out. And then I would start going to shows and stuff. And then eventually I hopped along, too. And that was basically it. Like,
it was a long process.
We gained and lost a couple members along the way. But, like, nothing with ending on bad terms or anything like that.
Yeah, we don't have a bad band member story.
Yeah, no. Thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully.
But then, yeah, whenever it came together to the five of us and we were like really wanted to solidify it, then we were like, okay, well, let's change our name. Let's rebrand ourselves, come up with something totally new, and just hit it as hard as we can, really.
Chapter one. That's, that's what influenced that the most.
So have you guys always lived in West Virginia?
Michael lived in...
Are you all met within West Virginia? You're formed there.
Yeah, the local scenes that we were all affiliated with were in West Virginia. And then, it's like Michael lived in Virginia, but it was literally, like, right at the border, basically, like, maybe half an hour from the border.
I gotcha. What's the, West Virginia is a weird place to have a band come from for the most part, especially, I shouldn't say a band, because obviously there's a lot of music that does come out of that area, but I guess, like, a heavier type band. It's kind of rare that happens.
It's slim pickings.
Especially recently, it's not a lot of heavy around here.
I could understand that. I mean, but I think the heavy scene is coming back. You know, I think there was a lull for a couple of years. Where you guys are at in the in your state, you may be ahead or behind. You know, fads or trends. I'm in Florida, but my area of Florida is slightly behind, say like Orlando or Tampa or Miami. So we're not up to date as they are, but we're, you know, a little further along than some other places in Georgia or something, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
It's changing still. I feel like the scene, it comes and goes in waves in a lot of places. Like, you'll get hit with a lot of awesome bands in this Tri-Cities area or something, and then things might die out. They might not, but they always come back.
So what
there's always something.
So what is the scene like for you guys when you're starting out, like, in West Virginia? Like, just explain to, you know, anyone that is curious as to how that is. Because I assume it's more rural, small town kind of vibes out there, so.
Yeah. A lot of our shows back in the day were playing in community centers and, recreation centers and basically just anywhere that we could rent out and do. Because any venues that were, skate parks, any venues around here, like, if you're not playing bluegrass or whatever else, then you can kick rocks, you know?
I would understand that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a lot of really good music, like, that's come out of West Virginia, but it's just that it's been short-lived bands all the time. Like, I could go on forever naming bands that we've played with or bands that I knew growing up or lived around or whatever that I loved and were awesome, but it came to an end for them. And there's still, like, a lot of really good music in West Virginia. There's a lot of really good bands. They just don't get the exposure that they should, honestly. Mm-hmm. And, honestly, there's different, like, sectors. I mean, I'm sure it's like this with every state, but, like, it's mostly small towns. There's a few what we call cities in West Virginia. For you guys, it would probably be called towns, but for us, they're cities. And it's just... everywhere's a little bit different. Like I said, it's probably like that in every state. But like up in northern West Virginia, there's Morgantown, which is where West Virginia University is, WVU. Yeah. And there's a lot of really good bands up there, but that's 5 hours from us, so we really don't really cross paths with those guys too much.
Right.
When we do, it's awesome, and there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of talent up there. And then down here there's a variety of stuff. Like, there's our buddies Fams and the Hooligans. Like, they're like, Fams was a rapper, and then he added instruments to the mix. So, like, they're still kind of like, they're like a new metal kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really good. They're doing some awesome stuff. And there's a lot. And there's, like I said, there's just a lot of variety. But the only thing that sucks about the scene around here is, like, there's, I mean, kind of like I mentioned earlier, there's still not a lot of places to play.
Right.
Like, there's been waves where we've got, like, a set of, like, five solid venues that will travel around West Virginia or, like, southeast or southwestern Virginia and play. And it'll just come in waves. Like, there'll be a bunch of good venues, and then they'll get shut down.
They kind of all die out at once.
Yeah. And that's really what we're in the middle of right now. Like there was, like, four good places within, like, 2 hours of playing, and they all got shut down, like, in the same, like, 6 month span, which really sucks because they were awesome places, and the scene was getting built back up in many genres, not even just metal. These are places that supported whatever. And
just,
like,
venues in general, music venues in general.
It sucks right now, especially with COVID too.
I was about to say that was kind of happening right before the pandemic even started.
Yeah.
So right before I had a chance to hope that these would pick back up, the wave would come back, everything hit, and obviously, you know, everything was shut down for the longest time and all that. But now I'm waiting. Once everything picks back up, whenever that may happen, I'm just hoping we'll still catch that wave back up.
It's definitely a very difficult time right now, and that's why I was wondering when you're saying the venues were closing and blah blah blah, you know, et cetera. Was it due to the pandemic and just the lack of, you know, resources that the venue could stay open with? But sounds like it was kind of already on the lull beforehand.
Yeah,
so.
I'd say the pandemic
they actually
probably
had nothing to do with COVID.
Yeah, that might have dealt like the final blow was probably dealt by that to some of these venues, but
yeah,
it was already kind of happening. Like towards the end of last year, right as we were planning our release, we were like, where should we go with this? This was back when we were still able to plan an album release tour, which we kind of had to
scrap,
put on the back burner for now.
Yeah. That is a total bummer. So speaking of, you know, your music and stuff like that, you guys are kind of one of the, quote unquote, newer metalcore styled bands. Although you do have quite a few different influences that, you know, come out in the musical styles that you guys play. What would you guys consider yourself? Like, are you a full on, like, just basic metalcore band, or are you a new, like a new metalcore band, or like a djent metalcore? Cause there's some djent in there, and there's, you know, this and that. And I'm surprised there's not really a lot of country vibes in the music with you guys being from like an area that is pretty well known for that kind of like back.
It's kind of hard to think about.
Yeah. Like I went to the same college as, what's his fucking name? Brad Paisley.
Okay. Yeah.
Brad Paisley recorded one of his albums at the college that I went to. And, but yeah, like, I mean, we really aren't huge country fans. Like we've got like our select songs and artists that we're like, yeah, that's cool. But it's not really something we listen to on a regular basis. So it doesn't really take much.
We get
influence.
Down to some classic old country sometimes.
Yeah.
It's gotta be the right artist. We're very selective with our country.
Yeah, if it's
I
some
think.
Like Travis Tritt or something, then we'll get down to it. You know, maybe a little Alan Jackson every now and again.
That's like old stuff. I guess mainly I was thinking of like southern rock, but I didn't want to say southern rock, you know, like the twangy kind of like like a Maylene kind of vibe, Maylene and Sons of Disaster kind of vibe,
almost an early Attila or something.
Yeah, I don't really like I mean me personally like I don't know what defines some genres over others. Like I don't get it. I'm just like, okay, well, I mean, like, yeah, we're a metalcore band, but I don't think that we really. I mean, that we.
I don't think about that when we're making a song.
Right.
Okay,
no,
this is the genre of this album and the song. It kind of just comes together, and I'm like, well, what would you even call this? Then afterwards, I have to think about like, where what genre gonna, would we classify? And with the new album, especially, it's almost like each song kind of blends into a different genre or subgenre to where. It's really hard for me to label.
Yeah, I mean, you guys definitely do.
That question's always hard.
You guys definitely have like different elements, like we were talking about, and you're a band that also, correct me if I'm wrong, but you at one point had two singers, so I assume you still have two vocalist singers, right?
Yep.
Okay. And,
one of them.
we've got one here. One is in the other room somewhere, I'm sure. But what was the mindset of having two different vocalists, was it one for like heavier kind of screams and stuff like that and, you know, guttural noises, or what, and then one for like a cleaner sound or a sing, like a more melodic sound, or how did that come about?
Like whenever I first heard of the band, when it, like I said earlier, when Brandon joined, the band, like one of the bands before Kurt, we were Curses, Brandon did the low screams and then the other guy did high screams and the clean singing, which is what I do now, because originally I joined the band to be a guitar player.
Yeah, and that's what I was about to say.
Turns out they liked my vocals better than the vocalist, and he was better at guitar than me. So we swapped spots. And, I mean, yeah, it's just, I guess speaking of like right now, I just, we get a lot of compliments, and I mean, I love the way that mine and Brandon's vocals match up whenever I hit a high and he hits a low. And it's just like a very distinct sound. You know how, like when you hear Garrett Russell from Silent Planet, whenever you hear his screams, like immediately, like he could be in a feature in another song, you're going to know that's him right off the bat.
Right.
Yeah, like, that's what we've been told about whenever Brandon and I match up.
Okay, cool.
It's just got a distinct sound, and I love doing that. That's something that we do quite a bit. We try not to overdo it, but we probably do anyways.
Sometimes on the new album, you guys switch spots.
Yeah, yeah, we experimented on Bloom a little bit.
And, I love that layer where you do the lows and he does the highs.
Yeah.
Because it adds a whole, almost a reverse effect to the distinguishable vocal layer that people are used to with this.
Yeah, it sounds like a totally different set of vocals.
Yeah.
Because I don't really do very... I think I did lows maybe once or twice in the album.
There's like... I can't even remember which parts, but when they hit, I know.
I know layer. I did them in Wu-Wei. I did one low in Wu-Wei. Ever since, like, I've known these guys and I've watched them, and then when I joined, like, there's always been clean vocals in the mix, and Michael does some cleans, too, live, and that's primarily, like, was my strong suit whenever I joined. It was my clean vocals. Like, I like screaming, too, but, like, I was, like, more focused on like clean vocals and playing guitar, but I wasn't that fucking good at playing guitar. I was a half-ass guitar player. Still am a half-ass guitar player. But
fake it till you make it, baby.
Yeah. But it adds a lot of variety than if there's just like one vocalist doing everything, and it takes a lot of load off whenever we're playing live.
Yeah,
because like even if like if my part is about to come up and I've been going too hard and I feel like I'm about to fucking barf, I can go slap Brandon on the back and be like,
he kind of knows.
No, you got to do this part too. Now, buddy.
Pick up the slack real quick.
And we do that for each other live, and we experiment a lot live too, which makes things really interesting. Like we'll switch things up. I'll do lows where I'm supposed to do highs.
Yeah, I do enjoy that.
Where supposed to do lows, and we'll just mix and match. And it never really. I mean, we're always cool with how it sounds. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we're just comfortable with it at this point. I mean, with this band in particular, we've never really done anything else.
I'd rather do it that way.
Not for years. For you guys, anyways.
I'd rather experiment while we're playing live, at least a little bit, then have the same dead set routine, like step by step, like, all right, you're going to walk over here at this part of the song. And
just the same old show every night.
I can only flip my stick right before this breakdown or whatever. Like, it feels more comfortable.
We just really jam everything out. I love playing live. I love playing live more than I do playing in the studio or anything. Like,
I think that goes without saying.
I hate
playing in the studio, man. Too much is on the line when it comes to tracking.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of money involved in that, too, so you got to be with it, you know what I mean? Time is money, baby.
Yeah, I mean, even with, like, doing a live session or something, like, I love doing stuff like that, but, like, I mean, it's mainly to do with the crowd, though. Like, you're feeling them, they're feeling you, and you're just having fun and going with it.
Yeah, you feed off of them, you know.
Not too much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not worrying about, like, oh, I got to sound perfect Like, or, oh, I gotta look super cool during this breakdown. You're just doing it, and if it feels good, then.
And a lot of times, at least for me, I know a lot of us, we think the same way, but the crowd's reaction and their energy influences, like,
of course, yeah,
our energy and how we play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah. I feel more comfortable when the crowd has a positive reaction.
Yeah, or if there's just a bigger crowd, like, it's more to feed off of, and usually, like, it just goes really well. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, we've had very few shows where they've been really bad, but if we, like, on those shows where we've been really bad, if we feel like we've been really bad, there's barely anybody there, and
I kind of mentally make the decision. I'm like, okay, this is now just a rehearsal.
Yeah.
This is not a show anymore. We're practicing live stage rehearsal now.
So. Yeah, pretty much.
It definitely is rough. I mean, because I used to be in a band in my younger days, and I used to tour and stuff like that as well. So it's definitely hard when you hear about it all the time. You hear, like, oh, well, so such and such band, you know, they would go insane even if there's three people in the crowd. And, you know, kudos to those kinds of bands that can do that.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that probably usually will make it through the roughest times of, you know, of being in a band. But, yeah, it is definitely hard and almost like defeating when you have a crowd of like five people, you know. Yeah.
So, yeah. And we'll always start strong. Like we go at it right out of the gate like normal, but then like after like halfway through, like they're just kind of staring at you. They just got that dead look like, God, I can't fucking wait to go home.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, well, all right, well, that mic's going to stay on the stand, and I'm going to stay in front of it. Though. Yeah.
just kind of getting through the opening bands. Waiting
yeah,
for the
but if there is, like, five people and they're digging it, then, like, we're still in it. Like, we're still going to win it. Like, it's – I mean, we always have a good time playing because, I mean, we have a good time practicing just by ourselves, too. I mean
– And on tour, shows like that are almost your practice for whatever show the next day could be better.
Well, it can be hit and miss. You know, one day you could have 20 people, the next day you could have 2,000 people. And it just depends on, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, obviously.
Yeah, the and on those smaller shows, you can, like, do some weird shit, too. Like, you can, like, just kind of act a fool and, like...
Do something you would be afraid to do.
Yeah,
to
I can't really
much
think of an example,
crowd.
But, like, kind
of
no, step
get out of the
comfort
zone.
And,
there you go.
Yeah. Do some weird shit.
It's usually when we get our best photos too, or shows like that where we're kind of doing whatever. It kind of becomes a, like I said, a rehearsal or a live photo shoot.
Yeah.
if the stage lights are good, we'll still get some good pictures, even though there's just five people there sitting at the bar or something.
You just can't have them. You can't have them going out towards the crowd. You got to go from the crowd view to the stage. Yeah.
You got to get the perspective right.
Yeah, I know. I know how to work the angles too. You know. So. So you guys recently signed to Sharp Tone. That was that happened within this whole pandemic situation. So how did that even come about? Like, was that something that you guys were wanting to do, or did that just kind of fall in your lap, or did they seek you out, or did you know, like, how did that come about?
It kind of fell into our laps, I would say. I was looking through actually our Facebook page manager messages for the band, and you know how Facebook messages has a, what are they called?
It's like a folder, where, like a request folder
where
or something.
It's a folder, the request folder where the messages won't pop up in your main inbox.
Yeah.
I was sifting through that, because usually it's all spam and shit, so I was just deleting all those. And then there was a message from Sean, and I was like, is this real? Like, is this really him? And I clicked on it, and I forgot what the actual message said, but it was pretty much he would love to work with us in the future, and I screenshotted it. Sent it to the band chat. Davey sent the same screenshot to our manager at the time, and he was like, that's definitely really Sean. You need to reply to that right now. And the message was like 3 months old.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how long were you leaving him unread for?
It was about 3 months.
Wow.
And we messaged him back that day, probably that minute, and that's how we got contact with him. He was still interested, and we started from there.
Yeah, and that's this cool. happened a while ago, but like Shane mentioned earlier, I mean, we COVID put everything on hold for a while because, I mean, we've been setting up plans and like getting a solid game plan going for a long time, and we just had to kind of wait it out, and see what we could do about, like, I mean, merch, like, came into play because we wanted to have pre-sales and, like, the physical copies, which we unfortunately still haven't gotten yet because of COVID. But same thing with the merch. We got the merch, though. We just had to wait for, like, some things to open back up and people would be able to do what they need to do. And there was no sense in being like, all right, well, we're signed with Sharptone Records, and then Sharptone Records being like, hey, we signed Curses. We'll give you some material in about 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. we just sat back and planned everything.
Yeah, there's no sense in that.
So, make an announcement before.
So you said you were planning stuff and everything like that. Was that with Sharptone before you guys officially signed, or was that just on your own with your own, like, manager, management, and your own team?
We were signed to Eminence Records before we were with Sharptone, and that only lasted for 1 year, I believe.
Pretty much the first album.
Yeah, the first album, and then...
up to when we started tracking the second album.
Yeah, and then it ended. And the tracking for Bloom started a while ago, too, because actually we were only planning on making Chapter 2 a 5-song EP, and because we were tight on money and we wanted to just get something out, like, right, as soon as possible to keep the ball rolling. And then that's when we found the message from Sean, and as we talked, he was like, well, how about you guys just go back and do 5 more songs and we'll help you get that rolling, and then we can come out with a full album for your debut with Sharptone. And we were like, well, hell yeah, sounds like a plan. And then so we went back to King Studios and knocked the other 5 out, like, within, like, what, 2 months or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, because we only needed, I don't remember what the last 5 were, but all the songs on the album were recorded in very different times, or at least written in very different times. I know the oldest one, our next to last song, Follow the Fire, we actually wrote that at the same time we wrote Rest, our single that we released not that long after Chapter 1.
Yeah, that was in early
2018. Yeah.
And that song, we'd never actually had a recording of it to put on an album until Chapter 2, and it's the next to last song on the album.
Yep. And then the Door in the Wall, which is the second track on the album, that was the very last song tracked. Okay. Like, as we were crunching songs, or as we were crunched on time writing songs and trying to get back to the studio as soon as possible to knock out those last 5, that was the very last one
that was written. Like,
and then it ended up being the one that got the music video, and it's the second track on the album.
Is it because it was the newest song? You know, you were just so about it right then and there. You're like, we have to do it this one.
I mean, that might have had something
to do. I think writing the other songs influences the next song you wrote. So that's almost like, that is, The Door in the Wall is the product of us writing every other song on the album. Like, it's not at all chronological, but that had something, it influenced it for sure.
Is that your favorite song on the album? Or do you have a favorite song on the album?
It's,
or do you love them all the same, you know?
It's in my top 3. Mine change, almost.
Whatever your mood is, you know?
Weekly, yeah. I always love Amethyst, and Breathe is one of my favorites just because the breakdown at the end is incredibly fun to play on drums because it's got a lot of accents and cool shit on the in-betweens, but I change my mind every week on my favorite song.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely in my top 3. Out of every song on the album, but, like, I've never really sat down and thought about it. Like, it's definitely in the top 3, though. I know that for a fact. I love that song.
And, you know, like, some of the songs, like Follow the Fire, we're very used to now. So it's hard to consider that a new song when we've known it for years.
Yeah, we've been playing Follow the Fire for a long time.
So I can't be biased towards The Door in the Wall because it's the most recent one we wrote. So it's got the freshest ears.
I can understand that. And usually, I feel like bands kind of just don't like their songs that much anyway because you're so used to them. You know, you kind of like, you have this product that you've brought from like nothing, obviously, but you've also been working on it for so long that you get tired of it, you know?
Yeah, all that happens. Yeah. By the time we release an album, I'm so used to it. I'm like, all right, I'm ready for the next one. Like,
yeah.
What's next?
So you guys did release your album, not this month, obviously. It's last month. But
it's within
the last month you've released a record. Now, how does COVID play into that? Because like you said, you guys were planning on doing like an EP at some point. Was that something that happened before? Were you planning on that before the pandemic and all the shutdown happened?
Well, that was supposed to be Chapter 2 was the EP. And then whenever Sean hit us up, we added those next five songs. I mean, as of right now, like we probably, I mean, once we've got the songs written completely, we'd like to do another full length album for the next one. But we haven't really talked about recording since COVID happened, because I mean, obviously it's really just not like something that is a main focus right now, yeah. Like getting another album out, like right off the bat. Like we're definitely working on stuff right now, but really the main thing that the pandemic has held us back with is the physical copies for the CDs, because we've had like, we've had our fans message us and like be pissed off. They're like, if you guys aren't making physical copies of the album, then I'm not buying one.
Yeah.
We're like, that sucks. I mean, we're trying to get them like as soon as possible. We will have them eventually. We're still working on that.
And you're not the only one dealing with that either. Cause like Invent Animate, I think they've been going on with Graveview they've been trying to get the vinyl out at least for a while. And I think it's just now starting to trickle in a little bit maybe, but yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I ordered the Misery Signals. I don't know if you're a fan of Misery Signals, but
yeah.
I ordered their newest album on vinyl, and then, you know, as time progressed, I was like, oh man, I hope I get it when I'm supposed to get it, you know. But yeah. Thankfully I did. It wasn't delayed or anything like that. But you know, that was a fear of mine, and it's crazy just to think how everyone is planning for everything going forward, because a lot of stuff is just up in the air. Like no one knows when you're going to go back to touring, you know. It could be next
year.
This
has changed everybody's plans,
because we've had show offers too. We've had quite a bit of show offers in the past few months, well, the past couple months I'll say, but we're just kind of like, we're just not really comfortable with it yet. Like I mean, we want to play, we want to play so fucking bad, but it's not really worth I mean, there's greater risk than a reward. I mean, like I said, we know that a lot of our friends and our fans are locally, especially like want to go to a show, want to see us play. I mean, we want nothing more than to do that, but I mean, it's just
safety. It's too soon. A big concern.
Yeah.
Of events right now.
Yeah, and then schools are opening back up too, and like and colleges and stuff. And man, like whenever people like, I mean, I'm not saying all college kids do this all the time, but I mean, you know, like in college towns, like motherfuckers are at bars and they're like, hey,
oh, yeah.
Have you heard the new Curses album? What? Like screaming at each other's faces, just doing
spit
that
particles
shit.
Going everywhere.
Like, I mean, a lot of places we play are at bars too. And like, it's just, I mean, if one person's got it, it's going to be a fucking cesspool. And, like, we don't want to get it, and we don't want to spread it.
Yeah,
like,
you can't scream in a mask, can you?
I don't want to.
That's not a thing, is it?
It'd be a little different. It'll sound a little different, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'll just do the things that those Karens do, just cut a mouth hole, like, when they're eating. You ever seen people do that?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Holes out of their mouth?
I've seen a lot of those videos, and just, like, random, you know, like, random Karen breakdown, public freakouts on YouTube where people just... Yeah,
those are the best.
It's great.
Oh my god!
So you guys are obviously like pro mask people. We had Barney, the singer for Napalm Death. We had him on the podcast last week, and he went out on like, I don't want to say a tirade, but he definitely lamented his issues with people not wearing masks because he wants to get back out there too. You know what I mean? And
yeah, that's what we all want, really.
Yeah, and you never. I mean, I don't personally know if doing something is going to make something happen easier or better, but.
Yeah,
like he said, I don't want to be a dickhead and go out in public without my mask. And regardless of what my personal views are on the whole situation, I just want to kind of, you know, ease everybody else.
Yeah, same. Like, if anything, if it helps, if it helps 1%, then that's 1% a little bit better.
It hurts. That hurts 0%. You know what I mean? To do it.
Yeah,
it hurts 0% to do it.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
That falls into the idea that if everybody would have just done that from day one, we'd be in a better place now.
Yeah.
You can't go back in time, so you'll never know.
Yeah, because New Zealand's like they're basically back to normal because they had everybody quarantined for like a month or two, and then whenever they opened back up, they had everybody wearing masks. No, they did it for like 2 weeks. Everybody quarantined. Like, nobody went out. Like, the government brought them shit, I think. I could be wrong about this. I know in the Philippines that the government brought them shit. I got some friends over there. I was asking them how it was going, and they were like, they were completely quarantined. Government brought them shit. And
one month?
Yeah, something like that. But I know in New Zealand in particular, like, everybody was wearing their masks, and they're like, their cases have dropped like crazy. And in West Virginia, like, we were doing pretty good. Like, we shut down restaurants, like going inside restaurants, mm-hmm. going inside bars, all that jazz. Stores were closing earlier, and it went from like going, like, the cases going up to they kind of flatlined a little bit and started to go down, and then they were like, okay, well, I guess we can open back up now.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, right back up. And I've been seeing pictures. Like, my buddy, he lives in Morgantown, where West Virginia University is. Number one party school in the nation, or it was.
Yeah, it's always in the top three.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they're a huge party school. They're the motherfuckers burning couches, like, every goddamn night.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing pictures of them. Like the college students, and like they're all gathering at places and right next to each other without masks on and stuff. And I'm like, I mean, I get it. You want to go have fun, but like,
at what cost? You know,
you're fucking it up.
Yeah,
like you're making it harder.
I don't want to be biased towards either side of this. Like you said, but maybe we could be more safe and things would get better.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
instead of forcing things to go back to normal, it's not going to go back to normal.
Live streaming is cool and all, you know. I like watching live streams on the, you know, bands doing it, but it's not the same. And you know, I'm definitely when I have an issue, like, there have been some bands that have charged for their live streams and stuff, and to me, I'm like, I get it. I get the idea behind it, you know, and there has to be some kind of income, some kind of residual effect for the band to do and to survive. I understand that, but there's bands that aren't doing that, you know.
Charging. And, I would at least maybe have, like, I've seen bands have a PayPal donation. Yeah. They'll just have their PayPal link. They're like, hey, if you want to donate and help.
I feel like that may actually get you more, in all honesty. I think because when you go out there and again, I'm talking about bands I grew up loving are charging $15 to watch their live stream. And
I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, it's just a little
with my
much.
Bank account right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and exactly. Not that saying that, you know, everyone out there is hurting, you know, not just the music industry.
Yeah,
you know,
so everybody's getting their own struggle right now. And
it's a little much. And you know,
right after this stimulus, I don't know if that's the next thing people need to be paying, like $20 or whatever for
the
stream.
If I were in one of those bands who like made like could make a shit ton of money like doing that, I mean, watching it like live right then and there, like that's probably a pretty good idea to charge people to do that. But then as soon as it's over, release it on YouTube and then ask
as
for
a free.
Yeah, I mean,
because I think that's what like DGD did with theirs. It was something like that. I could be wrong though.
Yeah, I ended up seeing it on YouTube afterwards. I didn't watch it.
Okay. Yeah,
I think that's what they did.
The only one I sat down and was all like, all right, it's time to party. I have a couple of beers here with me, and I'm going to fucking just sit down and watch it. Was the Between the Buried and Me Colors live stream.
I missed that.
I watched that, but then to rewatch it, you had to be subscribed to their Twitch, which, I mean, it's like $4 or something like that, which is not a lot. But I definitely enjoyed, you know, sitting there watching it and seeing the chat, although I couldn't communicate because I didn't subscribe to the to the channel, so I couldn't communicate with anybody. But it was cool to watch, and you know, part of me was like, man, it would be really cool if after they stopped playing, they did like a little, I don't know, Q&A or like sit down with the band kind of thing, which they did, but
personal.
It was a different. I think the next day they did another showing of it, and then they did a Q&A. But again, it was only for those behind the paywall. But you know, it's a weird situation. And I don't want to sound like I'm shitting all over it or anything like that, because it is a struggle, especially for the industry of that.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's trying to figure out how to approach this. So. Yeah.
But there's also ways
to try new things.
There is also ways to put it on YouTube, like you were saying, to where, like, you know, if you get a copyright claim, obviously you're the band, so you can, you know, fight that copyright claim or figure it out. But there's all different kinds of things that people are doing. Like a lot of bands are streaming just in general, not their live performances or anything like that, but, you know, everyone's become a Twitch video game streamer or something like that. So.
Or acoustic versions. So they do acoustic sets.
Have you guys thought of doing anything like that? Because you guys all do live in the same house, so.
We've talked about Twitch a little bit because, like, literally everybody in the band except for me, like, well, you guys don't play as much as you used to, but they would play Fortnite like it was their fucking job.
Yeah, our games evolved. It's like a studio. This is our studio room right here, even though you can't see it. There's several screens, several computer desk setups, and it's like a studio by daytime, and then sometimes it just becomes a game room by night.
Well, I mean, a lot of people play video games. I grew up playing video games and still love to play video games. So I find myself watching, like, I watch Keith from Every Time I Die. Sometimes he'll fucking jump on Twitch and start playing video games. And, of course, like, I like Every Time I Die, but I also like watching video games. And that's, like, the lamest thing to say as an adult, you know, because, like, to me, I feel like if you were to tell somebody, yeah, I just, like, sit around and watch other people play video games.
I enjoy it.
But a couple years ago, you couldn't necessarily say that, and people would be like, you're weird. But now it's become such a norm because everyone's streaming and such. But we all grew up playing video games with, like, a friend, and not all of them were two-player games. You had to sit there and watch the other person play for a while.
Especially the younger
brothers.
That's
a really good comparison. I've never thought about it like that.
Especially the younger brothers.
Yeah.
Because that's me. Like, I'm sitting, like, I'm always, like, I'll be in a rolly chair and watching all their screens and be like rolling to different screens and be like, yeah, go Davey. And I got like a beer in my hand just watching them the whole time. And I'll sit there with them for hours.
It's entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, it's entertainment in all forms, you know.
Indeed. It's basically live television.
I'm glad there's a market for that now, streaming establishment where you can do that online.
But Twitch definitely opened itself up to more than just video games in the last couple of years, too. Yeah. I mean, it used to not be like that, but now you can go on there, you can watch people just talking,
There's leather music. Work. I know Anthony Green from Circus Survive, he does, at least at the beginning of the pandemic, he was doing acoustic sessions, like, with his family, because he was locked in with his kids and stuff. He had a setup in his basement, and he would do acoustic recordings or streams on Twitch almost every night.
Yeah.
And he probably made a killing from it.
And I've seen people cooking in their kitchen with 3,500 people watching. And I'm just thinking to myself, that's like a big ass venue, man. You know, like, I equate it to stuff like that. I'm like, damn, that's 3,500 people just sitting here watching this dude make bread.
When you just see that number, you don't think about it. But until you think about 35,000 people standing there physically watching you cooking something.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes I would get bummed.
Like, come into the Fillmore this Friday, Paula Deen.
Yeah, banana nut bread. But, yeah, there are times where people may get bummed out when they do streams themselves and they have, like, you know, 12, 20 people in there. They might, you know, get down on themselves. But, hey, 12 to 20 people in a small enough room looks packed. So, you know.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere, too. You can't expect your first stream to have thousands of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what
that's something like you got to build a following on, I guess.
Of course, yeah. So what are some of the things that you guys are doing to combat, you know, not being able to make, I don't know how much money you make on music in general, but, you know, whatever residual income you have from music, what are you guys kind of doing to replace that? If you don't mind.
Like, our primary income comes from Spotify, so we're pretty lucky in that aspect right now. I mean, people are still streaming. Now, even though everything's shut down, people are probably streaming a little bit more, actually, so that helps a lot.
We kind of just, any money like that, we just put back into our account, and it usually goes towards whatever's next on our list of priorities, be it merch or whatever we need the most next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. But, like I said earlier, like Shane's playthrough, Davey's playthrough, and then we're going to have a playthrough from Michael come out maybe in 2, 3, 4 weeks, something like that. We've also got another video for our first single, Almost Heaven. That's going to be coming out soon. It's like it's not really a music video, but it's kind of like an informative video. There's like facts about West Virginia and the opioid epidemic because that's what that song is about.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's – we're excited to release that one because that's something that really means a lot to us personally. But like videos, basically, we're just trying to pump out content, really. And we know that we're going to go back to King Studios and do a live session at some point, hopefully in like early November is what we might be looking at going in there.
Hopefully.
And if we can get it to be a live stream, then we're definitely going to do that. We were talking about teaming up with some of his buddies who they're good with cameras. I'm not good with words about that kind of thing.
Yeah, we need Brandon here for that. Yeah, they've got a lot of expensive camera equipment.
Yeah, they know what they're doing right there with the with those things. But we want to get a hold of them. Actually, those guys, I think one of them are the same ones that did the streaming video for Wu Wei. We're gonna make that a live stream. We haven't talked about like how we were talking about maybe like just ask for donations or whatever. That's probably what we're going to end up doing, just maybe ask for donations. We're not really those guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, I think a lot of people would be more apt to just donate rather than to like, ew, $15. I'm not even going to remotely think about it.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't really talked the logistics of that out yet, but we're definitely going to do some studio sessions for sure. Even if they're not live. I mean, we may have one that's live. Because we've got another studio down in Bristol. It's actually a lot closer to us with our with another one of our buddies. It's Crooked Stick Studios in Bristol. And we did a live session with him for Rest a little bit after Rest came out. And we've talked to him about coming back. So, I mean, yeah, just try to keep pump out content of different sorts. And then, like, as more ideas come, I mean, we'll see what we can do with them and try to keep the momentum up, really. Because, we all work day jobs, and that's, like, mostly what we've been doing. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we've got enough content.
Yeah, for sure.
Compared to Chapter 1, we didn't have much to release, like, consecutively. After the album was released, it was kind of like, here it is. And then
We had some
videos, but yeah, it was kind of it wasn't what it is now.
We were a lot more prepared for this one, yeah, for sure. Even despite COVID pushing everything back, even before that, we were
that almost gave us more time to better finalize each of these videos.
Right.
And I don't know, we weren't as rushed, I guess. It set us back though, but we had time to just sit at home and work on stuff.
One thing I talked about a lot. In the earlier, this podcast has been going on for a year, maybe almost a year and a half at this point.
That's awesome.
Thank you. hopefully it goes on for a couple more years, but you know, we'll see.
I didn't even realize that you had a podcast until you hit us up. So I'm glad.
That's usually what's happening. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm glad we're gonna share it for sure. We're gonna spread the word.
We appreciate it, of course, but. Earlier on when we were talking about this, earlier on when I would talk to bands, I would just kind of like ask, like, well, have you ever thought about not having a fan club, but like a Patreon? Because Patreon obviously is a thing that's been going on for the last couple of years, and it's been getting a lot of momentum, obviously, currently with all the situations and stuff like that going on. But, you know, like, Frankie of Emir tried to do their fan club situation. Everyone, like, you know, took a shit on him about that. And next thing you know, a couple months later, everyone's like, hey, join my Patreon page and, you know, you'll get exclusive content and stuff like that. So, I mean, I feel like that's also kind of something cool that you can do as a band, because it does give the everyday fan a chance to have a more personalized experience with the band that they enjoy. Because, you know, depending on what the Patreon may offer, they may offer like a live stream Q&A or exclusive behind-the-scenes content.
Like we were saying earlier, that personalization with your crowd or your fans, that means a lot more than just a performance. They're just watching on their phones.
Yeah.
We do have a Facebook group. I mean, we don't get any money from it, but we've got a Facebook group that, like, we've just specifically added people that we know, like, they've come to our shows for years, or they really like us, or we're good friends with them.
Top fans group.
Yeah. We add them to the group. And at some shows, we've, like, had people, like, sign up for it and stuff, and we'll add them. And what we do there is, like, well, I mean, a lot of it is honestly just us getting fucked up and filming it, because it's usually pretty funny.
Especially with the pandemic. We've just kind of...
Yeah. There's only so much. It's not personal. Just us getting fucked up, but like us like doing certain activities or just like on holidays or something. Like we had Curses Christmas. Yeah. And
it's not just promos and, you know, formal live videos.
It's seeing us in our natural element.
It's like, very personal.
Yeah. Probably a little too personal. Yeah. So
especially if you're drinking, you get a little more sherry, you know, you share a lot more.
Oh, for sure. It's so much fun though. And everybody really enjoys it. Like we're not inappropriate or anything like that. We're just dumbasses, but we're dumbasses when we're sober too. We're just a little bit more open about it.
Whenever we've had some drinks. You were talking about the opioid crisis and stuff like that. That's kind of weird that you bring that up because obviously I live in Florida and that's also a big thing that's been going on here too. And
we're in some of the top states.
Yeah. When you were saying, when you were explaining about where you're from, like West Virginia and such, I was thinking, I was like, not a lot of good stereotypes come out of West Virginia for the most part. Mostly probably because a lot of people my age at least watch, you know, that the Dick House, the Jackass guys made the Wild Wives of West Virginia. That's some crazy ass shit. But you know that gives you a little insight onto like even the opioid crisis back then. So.
Yeah. I still love that film too. Like I love watching it. Like I mean, I hate that that's how some people live. But,
of course.
But it's. I mean, it's real.
100%.
Like I mean, it's totally real. And it's like a problem that's not addressed enough. Like there's been like phases of it. Like 1 minute the opioid epidemic is a trend. Like
people start talking.
It's like enough people have to overdose in a day, and then it'll make headlines again. And then it's like everybody forgets about it. Like the media and social media both.
It's too common. It's happening too frequently. People get bored and they need a new story. Yeah. So it's just kind of old.
Yeah, and it's still a serious issue. Like there's still overdoses, especially like in Cabell County. Like every day, basically every day. I don't know that for a fact if it's like every single day for the past year. I'm not going to throw any statistics out like that, but I mean, it's still an issue, and it has been an issue for a long time, and it damn sure ain't getting any better. And like, I'm sure you feel the same way about it in Florida. Like it never stops existing.
Yeah, we do have,
just because you stop talking about it.
Of course. And I think I don't have any information to back this up, but my conspiracy theory mind would suggest that I'm assuming the pharmaceutical companies pay a lot of that stuff to not be in the news. But we definitely hear.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. We here in Florida had at one point these pain clinics, you know, like just any and everybody could go in there and get a prescription or whatever, and you could hit
multiple pills a day.
Yeah, you'd hit multiple a day and shit. And that is some scary ass shit. You know what I mean?
Just seriously.
And even if you were to go to the doctor and they would prescribe you that, and you know your prescription runs out and the doctor won't give you another one, unfortunately, you're already hooked a little bit, and then you gotta like hit the streets, so to speak. But
yeah, and then you gotta start doing heroin. Like that's the gate into heroin, right?
And then
there.
You just bounce back and forth, whichever one is easiest to get.
Yeah. To consume or to get your hands on.
Yeah, because heroin's like 5 times as strong and less than half the price.
Yeah. Or you get the fentanyl, like, and the fentanyl is like way worse than heroin and shit. So
yeah.
It's a crazy time. Yeah. It's crazy that's even allowed. Or, you know what I mean? Like, who thought of that shit?
Who fucking knows? One thing that's crazy is our, one of our previous governors, his daughter owns one of the main suppliers of opioids to West Virginia pharmacies. And if that doesn't
tell common knowledge, but nobody, it's one of those really obvious things. It's right there if you just look it up, but there's some kind of purposeful misdirection.
Yeah, no one's talking about that.
You have to find it yourself.
Well, not to bust off of that topic, but let's bust off of that topic. So, you had a song Party Monster. Is that any relation to the actual, I don't know if you saw the movie with Macaulay Culkin, the Party Monster movie. Was that in relation to that or?
Not at all. Actually, we were supposed to do a Panic at the Disco cover. That was the original plan.
That is the original idea. We have a rough mix. somewhere.
Lying is the most fun.
Okay.
Dot, dot, dot.
So at least it's off the good album.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
OG.
Yeah. We had a pre-pro for it all completely done when we got there. Dude was like, "Yeah, you should do something more relevant."
Yeah, and I'm mentioning any names, but he's kind of like, "Eh."
Yeah, he was like, "Nah."
Can we try something else? And we were like, "I mean, I guess."
To figure it out. They can fucking figure it out. But, but
Google.
Yeah, we were just like, "God damn it!" We worked hard on this. Like we were a little butthurt, but
we had several other ideas already. So we were like, "Well, let's vote on which one we want to do." We had a Spotify playlist, so we ended up picking that one.
Yeah. So I'm happy with how it turned out. It was, we became bigger Weeknd fans after we recorded that. Because I didn't listen to Weeknd at all until we did that. And it worked out because, I mean, that was our first music video that we had released as Curses too. Because, and it was totally DIY. Like, we just got a few of our photographer friends we basically just threw a house party and gave away free beer from 9 to midnight and then started filming at midnight.
There you go.
So everybody was already drunk and they were loose and they were going to have a good time and not just be standing around. And
you guys ready to hear the same
song? We were
song?
Checking IDs and all that too. Like, we were doing it legally. And it was just really easy way to make a first music video that was half-assed decent for being DIY.
Yeah.
And the cover turned out good. And everybody always asks us to play it, and that's like the biggest bug in our ear. Like, play Party Monster.
That's definitely the problem with doing a cover song and it going well. There's bands like, obviously Limp Bizkit did Faith, and they were one of the bigger I don't want to say they started this whole thing, but they were one of the bands that took like a regular song, and they were a heavy band at the time, and they turned it into something completely different. So my band, when I was in the band, we did Britney Spears' Toxic had just come out or some shit like that. And recorded that, and then of course that became like what anybody wanted to hear at any show, and like,
cover.
Yeah, obviously they're like yelling out Toxic the entire show, and I'm like, yeah, we're gonna get to it. Don't worry. But you know, it's kind of one of those things you live and die by, where you either are gonna love that you did that or hate that you did that, but still continue.
I love our cover, but it does sometimes irk me how many plays it gets in comparison. The rate of I don't know if it's just because the name Party Monster and people, you know, when you search on Spotify Party Monster and you click within the search link, the Weeknd song, when that song ends, it's going to play the next Party Monster in your search.
Yeah.
So I don't know if most of the plays just come from that, or it got added to a bunch of
it was on a lot of playlists.
A bunch of playlists people have made, it got added to.
And that's a bonus too. I mean, and I'm not saying this happens with you per se, but just, unfortunately, a lot of people that do check out that stuff, when they go to check out the band, the bands or the music, they're like, that's not really exactly what I'm into that much. But
they're like, I like the cover, but I don't know.
But, I love those. I used to love those Punk Goes Pop albums in the early days, more so when like a heavier band would cover a pop song, because
like back in like Punk Goes Pop, like Volume 1 to like 3 or 4, like that's when it was like, holy shit, this is the coolest thing ever.
I gotta pick and choose usually, especially with the recent ones. I'm not trying to totally hate on them, but yeah, I gotta, there's usually about 2 covers on
they'll do one every now and then, you know, on an album, but it seemed like it started to become like, now this is what I call music, you know. They just like crank another fucking cover album on every other couple of months or
what's
year
next?
So it is kind of like daunting just to have those all the time. But I want to state before we get too far off that my band did it way before Static Lullaby or the other what fucking band did it? Someone else covered, I think Dimmu Borgir covered Toxic or some shit like that, and then that was like 2 years after we did it, and I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, damn it. I bet that was so fucking annoying.
Well,
especially, that's a very popular song.
Yeah.
So
not only that,
people can hop on it no matter what.
The production values on our Are the production on our demo compared to the other, like a Static Lullaby or Dimmu recording theirs, far surpassed our quality? So of course it's a much better song to listen to in general, but ours sounded like just we like, sat recording
nah,
the tin
can. Nah, fuck that. You guys did it first. That's totally your idea.
Totally truly matters.
Hey, you know, when it first happened, I was like, oh, that means they must have heard our song, right? One of those bands had to have heard it through the grapevine, but probably not. Probably not.
You got to check first. Yeah. I mean, we did that with Party Monster. We were like, has anybody already covered this? And is it really good?
No one at the time had done that for sure. Punk Goes Pop and all that shit wasn't even a thing at the when I mean, we're talking like early 2000s is when we covered that song. So yeah, but yeah, that was just one of those goof things that we thought of the day before a show. You know what I mean? And then we played it at that show, and then we were fucked. Something that we just had to keep going. So I was like, we're gonna Limp Bizkit faith this bitch all the way to the top, but that didn't happen.
I'm glad we're not the only band where that's happened after the cover. It's just like, play Party Monster.
Yeah.
Are you playing Party Monster tonight?
Yeah, it's really our Georgia crowd, like Atlanta and Augusta. Like
they love
like
it.
Anytime we go play in Georgia, like that's all we fucking hear. It's like, why don't you guys play Party Monster anymore?
Yeah. Because we have other songs, guy, okay?
Yeah. We have a whole new fucking album. That came out like 3 years ago. Give it a break. Yeah.
I had to put the click track for Party Monster in a separate project for Georgia. It was like our Georgia set list, just in case everybody's screaming at us to play it.
Yeah, because we stopped playing
somebody
it
looks
months.
Back at me and they're like, fine, play the fucking song. I had to make sure it was ready to go somewhere in that project.
Yeah.
Just
yeah, because we didn't play it for the longest time. Like, any time we played in West Virginia or Tennessee, anywhere, like, semi-locally to West Virginia, like, we stopped playing it for, like, at least, like, 3, 4, maybe 5 months. And then when we went to Georgia, like, we got a bunch of messages from people saying, you guys better play
Party Monster. I never practiced.
When you come down here.
I never practiced it either. I practice our actual songs. I never practice Party Monster. So when it happens, I'm like, I think I know.
You get to fucking, you know, wing it.
Bullshit it through.
Oh, yeah. I probably sing the wrong words the whole time, but it's like mainly like chorus, 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 verse, chorus, 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 verse, chorus, bridge.
It's borderline chorus, pop chorus. Music, so it's going to be repetitive.
Yeah, very repetitive for sure. Before we kind of wrap it up here, another kind of, I just want to get your opinion on like a story like that just broke today, obviously, so it's fresh in my mind, but another metalcore / rock band kind of, you know, fell under the guillotine this morning.
TC?
Yeah.
Cancellation.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Tyler kind of got outed as a kind of sexual misconduct / groomer guy.
That one hit me hard, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, how did that affect you guys? Because, I mean, obviously you guys aren't the same band, obviously, but you kind of, you know, moonlight in the same genre for the most part. You know, you could tour together, so.
It's really fucking disappointing because, I mean, there's, like, he's not the first, and he's probably not going to be the last. There's been so many fucking bands that have had allegations against them. And, like, I mean, that's definitely a big name. Like, there's people who know Tyler Carter that don't know Issues.
Yeah.
Like he's a big guy. He's been a Woe Is Me and shit. Like, he's a lot of people look up to him. And that's
got a solo
really
gig, too.
Yeah.
He's been famous for what, like over 10 years, so it's hard.
Yeah, some of these allegations are coming. Some of these allegations are stemming from like 2012, 2014, so yeah,
since I was a young teenager, I've always loved every
it could have been
type
you.
Of music he's made. Yeah, and now to look back and all that just be kind of canceled. I can't listen with any artist that this happens to. I can't just listen to their music
if it's
anymore.
If it's been proven, like, and they, like, say some shit. Like, if it's been proven, then I'm like, nah, fuck you. Yeah. Like, I'm...
It ruins the music.
Or if there's, enough evidence, then I'm like, nah, fuck that. But, like, I will say, like, you really never know sometimes, but, like, that's what sucks about it. Is you never really know, like, how true some of these things are. Because, I mean, it seems like a trend almost right now. I'm not gonna say that, that anybody's lying or anything like that, but it's just confusing, and it's a fucking shame.
Yeah.
It's a real shame because I mean, I know for us as we were like growing up in like the music scene, like we were That was our safe space. Like, that was our time to go and be who we are.
And a lot of these
feel
people...
free and be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a fucking shame that people have went out to shows and to get that same escape that we did, and they get taken advantage of.
Yeah, they get preyed upon.
In the worst of ways.
Yeah, they abuse their fame.
That's fucking terrible.
It's hard after, you know, a lot of these people we've looked up to in the past.
Yeah.
It's hard to take all that away.
Yeah.
And be like, wow, this whole time this person was a shithead, like an abuser or whatever, you know, whatever the story was.
It kind of did. It sucks too, because obviously those people are predators regardless. And it makes, sometimes I think like, well, would Tyler, and again, we don't know at right now at this point in time.
Yeah, what, it's very fresh. So like,
all I've read is he was talking about areolas with some kid who was underage, and that's creepy, but
that's fucking weird.
You know, I don't know exactly what the extent of what's gone on, but you know,
usually like when it's enough for the band, when the band makes the public post that they are no longer associated with whatever member, that's when I'm like, okay, they must have something else going on.
There's more to the story, because Lorna Shore did the same thing with CJ McCreary whenever, like, because Lorna Shore, I remember seeing the Facebook post, it was like CJ McCreary is no longer a part of Lorna Shore.
That was before I even knew any story.
That was it.
Yeah.
Like, it must be true.
Yeah, that was a big one earlier in the year, or late last year, whenever that happened. But
that like started the chain reaction almost.
Oh yeah, this year has been just, you know, domino effect, which it sucks, obviously, because there's bands that have just been going under the knife left and right that, you know, people have listened to and have have emotional ties to it for certain times in their life, like. You know, a lot of people in the comments for Issues were like, oh my God, this band got me through so much, yada, yada, yada. And then now I found out that,
it's
a creep. You know? Yeah, so it's a
bummer. I will say, I've seen way more like positive comments on Issues' Facebook page. Like, I was scrolling through the comments, seeing what people were saying. And there's so many people that are like
defending,
nice about it. And defending him rather than like, yeah, fuck this guy. Because usually whenever it happens to a band, and then everybody's like fucking hyenas, like, on Facebook.
This guy's canceled. They deactivate their personal Facebook, disappear.
Yeah, they're ruthless. I mean, as they should be, really.
Yeah.
But I was just like, man, like, they're really taking it easy on him in these comments here. Like,
yeah, I kind of felt that too, just based on how many through the comments of Lamb Goat, obviously, which are going to be askew regardless, but there were comments on, like, you know, the band's IG and just on Twitter and stuff like that, because I saw the story break last night, and so we posted it and whatever, but in doing so, I also did, like, more investigations to find out, like, what the heck's going on, because obviously they're not going to come out front and be like, well, this is what happened, so you have to kind of...
They're not going
to
show the screenshots. They're going to be from something external.
Yeah, and then, of course, you go to those Twitter accounts or whatever that you know, released whatever screenshots or said their piece or whatever, and they're private. So you're like, what the hell? How do I find out anything? And so it's just crazy.
Yeah, because you're just in the dark.
Yeah, and, you know, everyone is in the dark, obviously. But I agree that cancel culture can be totally fucking negative, and I don't like cancel culture for that, because a lot of people do just jump on emotional, you know, when you see something – right away, you have an idea of, like, bullshit.
The first thing they read, they make the decision before they even know the story.
Yeah, and then some people won't even research the story. Or if the story is posted, like, let's say you see a headline and there's a story in explaining the headline, and the headline may be a little clickbaity or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And then they just go off the headline. They're like, fuck, and then, you know.
Yeah, they won't even read they won't even click on the actual article. They'll read the headline, share it.
Oh, yeah.
What a shit.
Yeah, that's a major problem with social media, like, in many aspects.
I agree. But again, you know, there is a good and a bad thing that is going on with that. Obviously, a lot of the bands are, you know, like I said, getting cut by the knife, and it's a domino effect. But I also see it as going forward, you know, fucking people are going to have to be hyper vigilant and hyper attentive to, like, how they portray themselves. Cause, like,
it's going to force, it's going to force the right people.
Right. Because you're going to lose some of the predatory kind of people. Like, And again,
yeah, people that deserve to be exposed should be exposed by all means. And it's definitely it's setting the bar higher for musicians, which is really good, which is awesome. I mean, I could see how a lot of artists they get in a band and they blow the fuck up, and then it all goes to their head, and they think they can do whatever the fuck they want.
They think they're invincible.
Which
they can
bullshit.
And that's when the true bad side of these people.
Yeah,
come
and it's
out.
Good that people, if anybody from a band or whatever has hurt anybody, then they deserve whatever punishment is suitable for the situation. But shut up, Siri. Phone's going on for some reason. It's.
I don't want it to cancel the full band when it's just one member. I don't want the whole band canceled. You know, I feel bad for the other members.
But if the other, and I'm not saying they do or they didn't or the, you know, whatever. Tyler's his own person. If they knew about it or something like that, it's like
that's when it's.
What do you do? You know what I mean?
So, and that's something that you never really know.
And I'm not talking about just issues in general. I'm talking about any band.
Band. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just using them as an example, I guess.
Yeah, there's a jam band that I listen to called Narco Medicine for the People, and they were one of my favorite bands of all time. Listen to them almost every damn day, and the same shit happened to their singer, and he took months to say something, and I actually just recently looked it up a few days ago to see if he'd came out with any statements or anything, and he did. But I remember the first thing that happened whenever all this stuff started coming to light was his band. Like I said, they're Narco Medicine for the People. Narco's the leader. He's he's the face, whatever.
Yeah.
The band, it was okay, this is from the band, Medicine for the People. We didn't know about any of this, him, being rude to girls or, whatever allegations that had been stated or whatever. But, it was really discouraging. And if the band does did witness misconduct or whatever, abuse, whether it's mental or physical, then
if they turned a blind
eye, fuck the band too.
Yeah. Well, the whole band should be canceled.
Yeah, but I mean, it does suck for the band in a lot of cases where,
for the innocent members that did not have any idea.
Yeah, it didn't. They're doing other shit.
Especially if the accused party is a big part of that band. I don't want to keep using Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler. You know,
I don't want to use him as an example all the time, but obviously he is a very polarizing and captivating person in that band. Not to shit on the other members, but.
I mean, no, that's just how it is. He's the face of the band. Not every band has the one guy that everybody thinks of, but I mean, hell, you think Falling in Reverse. You know the drummer's name?
No.
Exactly. Yeah. You know the vocalist's name?
Yeah,
though, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah. We know. I think everyone knows him.
Yeah. Not like I said, not all bands are like that. Yeah. But I mean, Issues is definitely one of them, and that's why they're a great example.
Like you said, when it's the face, when it's the true face of that band, is when it hits the band the hardest.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, do we even continue as Issues? Are they talking about?
I don't.
Right
now? I'm sure they're talking about.
Issues would be too ironic. They can't. There's
definitely,
no way.
Yeah, they should pivot on the name.
We've had some issues in the past few months, but we're back, and this is our new vocalist.
And we are Issues.
It's like we're out of here.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy how often it's coming up. You know what I mean? But the first time I kind of had to deal with anything kind of remotely like that, obviously it was way long ago. There was a band, I don't even know if you guys know the band, but Lost Prophets. They were an early 2000s band from England or the UK or somewhere, and they had this album, The Future Sounds of Future Sound of Progress was the album, and I fucking really loved that album. And then they had a couple other albums after that that I kind of didn't listen to as much, but they got very big commercially. And they ended up, you know, being on video games and fucking all this other shit. Next thing you know, fucking the singer is shooting meth, heroin, and fucking kids and shit and doing weird shit. And it's just like, what? But, you know,
it destroys everything.
Yeah, but you also don't. I mean, that shit had gone on for so long before anyone fucking knew about it. You know, and no one had. This was the time before cell phones and before tweeting and just fucking cameras being readily available all the time. And, you know, I think. not just with the music scene and with what's going on about what we're talking about, but in the world, I think that's, we're starting to see, that's why so many people are posting whatever about whatever situation, whether it be police brutality.
Yeah, I'm glad that this is making people that have been closed on this and have been putting this under, sweeping this under the rug. That it's almost giving people confidence to come out.
Yeah. Yeah, it also gives you the ability, because everyone has, I mean, if you think about it, even within the last 5 years, not everybody even had a smartphone with a camera. You know what I mean? And that's also, like, that's 2015. So in your head, you're thinking, like, oh, we've had these cell phones for fucking 20 years, but not everybody. You know what I mean? The iPhone wasn't readily available like it is now. So it feels like the tides are turning on that, to where no matter what's going on in the background, you know, you got to fucking tread lightly on anything you do in your personal life or public or private. So this is crazy. I mean, it's for the better overall.
I mean, if you're an asshole, then you're an asshole. And you deserve whatever's coming to you. Karma's going to bite you in the ass one way or another.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, as far as that situation, like, I mean, I'm glad that it's coming to light, because I mean, it's like we were talking about the opioid crisis. I mean, just because you don't talk about an issue isn't going to make it go away.
It's still there.
I'm glad that people are speaking up now, especially the victims that are for real, like, because they shouldn't have to carry that weight on their shoulders. And just because it's like, oh, well, that's so and so. I don't want to cause any trouble there. Like fuck that. Like no, if you've been like seriously hurt, then like whoever's responsible deserves to be punished in whatever way is suitable for the situation.
Their fame does not determine.
And backlash. Yeah. And backlash is a real thing too, especially when we're talking about shit on the internet. you know, like we were just saying, fucking, there's a more than a handful of fans of issues that are willing to fucking go to bat for Tyler right now without knowing anything.
Before and they know, it's like,
and so they're
blind
shitting,
ignorance.
They're shitting on the victims, and there's victim shaming and this, that, and the other. And this is, it's gross to see. But again, we don't know the situation, the three of us here, so we don't know exactly what's going on, but we kind of have an idea, you know? So.
Yeah.
Like I said, when the band makes an official statement, that's when I'm like, okay.
You gotta go,
I'm looking into this now.
It's not just the rumor mill, I guess, but
nah.
Well, let's get off the fucking shitty topics. Let's just go ahead and kind of end this over. Let's just go ahead and end this real quick. So,
what's another
positive streak? What is the plan going forward for you guys as a band, now that we spent the last 30 minutes talking about bullshit in the world? But you know,
I mean, shit, man. Like, it just depends on what happens with the virus. I mean,
plans have changed. We've had to change the whole release plan, and
yeah, we definitely plan on releasing more content as of right now. But moving forward past that, I mean, eventually we are going to be touring again. That's definitely that we can't wait for.
Always writing.
Yeah.
We're still already starting to work on new materials.
Yeah, for sure. We've already got some stuff in the works there.
Do you have an idea of, like, maybe when you might want to release a new record? Because obviously you're not going to be able to tour as much as you'd like with the record you just put out. Because, like we said earlier, you may wait. Who knows when we're going to go back to shows? It might be 2021. It might be 22. You never know. But, like,
it's hard to tell.
If that's the case, then I mean that just means more time to write, and I mean, just the sooner the better, really.
I'm not going to say a
specific time, but like as soon as possible and as necessary. Like I mean, like I said, the sooner the better. Maybe release some more videos or something in the meantime. Like just keep content rolling and like just make this as fun and enjoyable for ourselves and for our fans and
keep
our friends.
Keep contact, yeah.
Yeah, like just however we can keep the ball rolling and keep curses alive and healthy and strong.
I wonder how it will affect bands going forward, because, you know, they will have, at this point, they're going to at least have a year off from touring and at least a year out of being, you know, the main focus of a fan's life. Because, you know, there's I feel like a lot of people are approaching it music differently now. It's like I didn't realize how many shows I went to on a weekly basis in general until the fucking shit stopped.
Until everything's gone. Yeah.
And like, if it goes on for another year, am I personally going to be like right back into that schedule of like going out to shows all the time, not saying like every day, but like, or am I going to get used to just being like not going out, you know what
it's
I mean?
Hard to determine how it's going to come back. Like I was saying earlier, like way earlier in the podcast, I don't think it's going to be like a, all right, starting this date, we're going to have shows again, all everywhere, every venue. And it's just up right back to normal.
Yeah.
Like you said, multiple shows a week. It's going to be some kind of slow build up, but it's hard to determine the safe point to start bringing that back.
Like, are people going to, I mean, obviously everyone wants to go to shows, but are they going to be scared to go because they don't, you know what I mean? Because I mean, a lot of people, depending on where you stay on this fucking COVID thing, a lot of people are like deathly scared of it. And some people are like, it's a fucking hoax. So there's definitely going to be people that are going to come to shows right away. But,
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's opposed views, but like, is it going to be safe in the pit? Like, that's question one. Can you get someone's sweat all over your shirt?
Yeah. Like, I don't want to punch this guy and make him sick. I mean, yeah. I'd hate that for him.
But he can take that punch. I just don't want to get him sick, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Punch is fine. I mean, he can punch me back. It's cool. I just don't want to get him sick, you know? I don't want him to get me sick.
Yeah, you got
to
get in the pit and love someone, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it. Do you guys want to give like a shout out or let us know, you know, who we should be checking out or, you know, any projects that you got going on the wayside that you'd like everyone to know about? Or
yeah. Well, you said Tuesday. Would this coming Tuesday is the roundabout date?
I think okay. The 8th or something, right? The 8th, maybe?
Yep. Okay, well, so as of then.
I should also say it will go up for Patreons before that, though, so just in case you're going to say some like shit that needs to be
the dated. Video's out now.
Okay. Well,
they may tweet about it or something like that, you know what I mean, and leak
it. We had an interview right at the release I messed up on, and I didn't realize the interview was going to be out a week later, and I was like, our album's about to come out tomorrow, and then by the time the interview was up, the album had been out for like a week and a half.
Yeah.
I felt stupid.
Well, I don't want you to get in trouble with like the label for fucking saying something beforehand. You know, I mean, I'm just giving you an idea of this will be out on next Tuesday, but it will also be up days before for Patreon supporters.
Okay. Well, I think as of right now, tomorrow, I think is that whenever the guitar playthrough comes out.
September 3rd. It's Thursday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So on September 3rd.
Say numbers. This
is tomorrow, right now. Yeah, September 3rd, we're releasing a guitar playthrough of Davey, Nice Wonder playing Amethyst. And, I mean, we've got a lot of content out right now, so just check it out. Go to Sharp Tones YouTube, search Curses. I mean, you can just search Curses and you'll find it on YouTube. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. We want to give a shout-out to our boys at King Studios, good old Justin, Ryan, and Ant. They're the shit. They're awesome. Their studio is great. It's a really fun work environment.
They've helped us a lot.
Yeah, we love working with those guys. Mishka Clothing out of Los Angeles, they hook us up with some really awesome threads, so check them out. And, check us out on Spotify, Amazon, iTunes, whatever you use.
Stream that new album on everything possible.
Oh, yeah.
We'll put the links in the description as well, so it won't be as hard for people to find you if they have trouble finding you.
Yeah, down there, guys. Yeah. Just go down there.
Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time to fucking hang out with me on this Tuesday afternoon. So I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us. Good to be on the phone and on the video chat with somebody in the same time zone as us.
Hey, yeah. The last one we did, it was from the UK, so I had to wake up like extra fucking early. So that was a bummer.
We had some 9 a.m.s.
Yeah, that's what you mean, man.
It's early for me.
I got you. All right, guys, take it easy.
All right, thanks for having us, man.
All right.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Do you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.